pending home sales down 6.3% year after year. And last year, there were not a lot of home sales either. The inventory is super low. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show and other shows and why that is. I asked David Hochberg via text. He's talked about on his show how few mortgage professionals are still in the industry, like a huge cut, because they just aren't getting work. They're paid by the transaction. If there aren't transactions, they ain't getting paid. I asked him, what about real estate agents? Are they still, are there a ton of them still? Or how is that working? Are half of them gone? And here's what David wrote back. The strong survive and the weak get jobs spinning pretzels and folding underpants in the mall. And I asked him if I could quote him on that. He said, yes. He said, please add, I mean, no disrespect to pretzel spinners or underwear folders. So I went to ChatGPT for some actual data. And yeah, the realtors, there was like 594,000 of them in this country in 2019, were well under 400,000. And that was last year's data. I imagine we're losing even more. Go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to say that's the most Hochberg response.
Yes. There's more
response
there.
Ever.
There's
yeah.
more there.
Yeah,
I cut
sure,
out.
I'm sure, yeah. I love you, Hochberg.
It was mostly in caps.
Helped me buy my house.
Oh, yeah.
Shout
same,
out Team Hochberg.
Stay with me, for sure. Absolutely. I'm keeping him alive in business. Me and you, Kevin, we kept Hochberg
there
going
go.
Last
Team
year.
Team Hochberg,
yeah, there
baby.
You go. Really quickly, let's try and do the Your Money Matters Spelling Bee. It's the National Spelling Bee Final tonight. I'm going to give my first word to Mark. Mark, how are you doing? You want to spell some words with us?
Hey, Jen. Jen, I'm doing great. Let's give it a shot.
All right. Oligopoly. I'll give you the definition. It is yes. I'll give you the definition. A market structure dominated by a small number of large firms. Oligopoly.
Oligopoly.
You added an L and added an A, and I'm sorry, Mark. Thanks for playing, though.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I put Mary Vandeveld on the spot the other day. I'll put Kevin Powell on the spot today for this next one.
Darn it, I was ready.
Okay. Well, you might stay ready. Kevin, your word is seigniorage.
Seigniorage.
The profit a government makes from issuing currency. The difference between the face value and how much it costs to make the currency.
Seigniorage. Seigniorage. Can you use it in a sentence?
Seigniorage is hard to spell.
Does it start with...
I mean, give me the first letter.
Yeah, give me the first letter.
It's an S. Seigniorage.
I don't know if there was a silent.
All right.
Seen S-A-N.
I'm just going to stop you right there. No. Mary, any guesses?
S-C.
No.
S-E-N-I.
Lauren Lapka, want to give it a go?
Oh, boy. S-E-I-N.
But you got the furthest. S-E-I-G-N-I-O-R-A-G-E. I didn't even know what seigniorage was, and I've hosted this program for 3 years and 3 months.
I thought you made it up.
Oh, now that I look at it, yeah. I've seen that word before.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to explain what it is if we have a little more time later in the show. I mean, I gave you the basic definition, but it's actually a really controversial thing in national economic politics, too. The idea that, obviously, we can print our own money, but we count it as revenue, that if we print a $100 bill and it only costs a dollar to make, the government says, well, that's a $99 profit for us, and we can spend that money. It's a little debated in macroeconomic terms, something we may not have time for today. I'll dive into it next week. Thanks for playing, everybody. Did I end up spelling it? Yes, I did. Okay. On this show, we like to talk about how the towns develop, how they expand, how they grow. And for that, we're going to turn to Kevin McHaley, president and COO at Charles Hall Construction. Kevin, welcome to WGN.
Good evening, John. How are we doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. So you are in charge of Charles Hall Construction. Before we get to Fox Lake, give us a minute of what you guys are all about.
No problem. I am a principal at Sterling Hall, which is a development company, and I'm the president and COO at Charles Hall Construction, which is a general contracting company. We specialize in senior housing and multifamily apartments, and we've been around since 1998.
Wow, that's awesome. And what's your connection here to Fox Lake? Why did they want you being their ambassador for building here on WGN?
Well, we saw Fox Lake as a great destination location. As you said, you know, it's the heart of the chain of lakes. We saw it as an opportunity to bring a brand new market rate luxury apartment complex into the community of Fox Lake. They have very little inventory there. It's a small hometown feel, and they got an existing Metro train station. And most importantly, the village of Fox Lake is very developer friendly.
So low inventory means if you build something, there's going to be demand for it, right? Is that the plan? Is that what makes it an attractive place to build?
That is correct, yes. I mean, Village of Fox Lake is really trying to keep the young professionals in the community because there is a lack of inventory right now.
Right, and there's a lack of inventory everywhere. That's not just a Fox Lake problem. But specifically to Fox Lake, you have people that have lived there for generations, or someone that is there wants to live there and remain there for the rest of their lives, and good for them. But if there's not housing stock available for the folks that maybe grew up there or new people that want to come out there, it can really stymie a town's development. So what's the plan here in Fox Lake?
Yeah, so like I indicated, we're building 154 units. It has a clubhouse. We got some nice site amenities. The clubhouse will have a fitness center, a dog wash, a demonstration kitchen. Some of our site amenities are going to be exterior fire pits, a dog park, some outside grill stations. And, you know, we offer about seven different unit types that range in various different sizes that, you know, will appeal to the young professional who's looking for more affordability versus, you know, a two bedroom and a den unit, which, you know, could be, you know, an empty nester.
So these are market rate luxury apartments, as you're saying. And I think you just hit on it there, that this is not a community just for the older folks or a community just for younger folks. You're really looking for cross-generational appeal here.
That is correct. I mean, our market studies show, and based upon past existing communities and experience, almost 50% of our current residents will probably be between the ages of about 25 and 31. So it's really that young professional who's, you know, married or not married, that's really looking at, you know, staying within the community.
So what's it been like working with the village? I know that is sometimes a hurdle for some people and developers, that it's not a symbiotic relationship. What was the experience working like with Fox Lake?
Oh, they welcomed us with open arms. We selected a site that was previously zoned commercial that had some constraints. We worked with them to get that site rezoned to high-density multifamily. We worked with the municipality to give us some government assistance via the form of a TIF, upwards of almost $9 million. They worked with us to reduce some impact fees, some sewer and water tap fees, and I also have to give some credit to Lake County. Lake County helped us work with the Upper Illinois River Valley Development Authority, and we approved an enterprise zone, which eliminated sales tax on all materials that we'll be spending to develop the site.
That's huge. Okay, so what, shovels in the ground here this summer?
2 months. I mean, right now we're finalizing our bank debt. So we got some banks that we're interviewing, and we're finishing our final capital raise. So within 2 months, we hope to be having a nice groundbreaking event with shovels on the job site.
And when do you think you'll be able to start signing people and moving them in?
Right around 12 months. So our we have 11 buildings, so 154 units. There's 14 units per building. You know, it takes us about 9 months to complete one building, but the entire development from start to finish will be about 24 months.
How have you heard interest from people already? Like, sign me up?
During my village board presentations, I mean, this has been a 2-year process. Fox Lake has been tremendous to work with, but I mean, we've had a lot of hurdles. So every single time I get a presentation at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting or the village board, I always have people approach me, want me to put them on the lead list.
Kevin, do you live in Fox Lake, if you don't mind me asking?
I live in Palatine, but, you know, I live right on that, you know, northwest line, and we've been gravitating and trying to find communities near the train station. But I can tell you this, last summer, my entire family went and rented an Airbnb on Fox Lake, and I went and I took them all to Blarney's Island. So we had a very good experience, you know, with an 80s rock star band out on Blarney's Lake. So we all got a nice good feel on the chain of lakes and what it means to be in Fox Lake.
I was just going to say, I'm from Donner's Grove. I must have passed through Fox Lake at some point, but I was kind of blown away. The park that they're just opening up last week, or maybe, yeah, last weekend, the gorgeous lakefront park. I mean, they know how to have fun. their slogan is, this is the life, and I can see why people say that.
John, we pulled up our pontoon boat that I rented on the chain, and we pulled right up to that park that you were talking about, and they had live bands, and we were listening to live music on a boat, you know, the weekend that we were there.
This is the life. Okay, I love that. Kevin, good luck with the project. Keep us posted here on WGN when you're moving along, okay?
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about Fox Lake.
Amen. That's Kevin McKaylee, president and CEO at Charles Hall Construction and a principal at Sterling Hall. And that's a developer. And go Fox Lake. What a great visit. What a great day it's been. WGN, been chatting for a few weeks, months, about the transit fiscal cliff that our RTA has said we're facing if we don't get a bill passed in Springfield that funds RTA accordingly. Ben Selinsky's been covering that and many other things through Capital News Illinois. He's been on Let's Get Legal. He'll be on again this weekend with another chat. But I wanted to get an update today. Ben, we're hearing there's some movement. There is a bill right on the that's being debated, right?
Yeah. Hey, John. There's really two bills actually out there. One bill in the Senate actually has the funding in the legislation that would be necessary to actually get rid of this fiscal cliff and address the issue that we're facing. The other bill in the House makes a lot of the same reforms that the bill in the Senate is supposed to make, but really it's, you know, the difference is that one bill has revenue, the other one doesn't, and that's where lawmakers need to come to some agreement on between both of these chambers.
So the Senate chamber has said, okay, we'll figure this out and how to make this work, but here's the taxes we're going to raise. The House isn't addressing that part too.
Yeah, exactly. But we are kind of hearing that the House is eventually going to have a similar plan with at least some sort of revenue plan. We don't know if it's exactly going to be the same, but it's going to have something to address it. But, you know, it sounds like there's still work to do across the Capitol here.
One thing the governor said he wanted was a reorganization of how it all works. Do both drills, bills kind of address that?
Yeah, that is actually very well ironed out in both these proposals. It's very similar in both. So what this really would do would turn the RTA into the Northern Illinois Transit Authority. It would keep the CTA, Metra, and PACE as, you know, their standalone entities, but it would make this newly revised RTA a lot more stronger to oversee fares, to oversee planning, scheduling, different things like that, that a lot of lawmakers have identified as a lot of the shortfalls of the RTA, that it just doesn't provide enough regional oversight to these three transit agencies.
Seems like it would cut out the legs of Mayor Johnson or any future mayor of Chicago. Is that how you and others have read that bill too?
You know, it kind of depends. One of the big things in the bill is changing the appointments to it. And at least under the proposal that they have right now, the mayor of Chicago would have five appointments to a 20-member board. The governor would have five. The Cook County board president would have five. But then the collar counties have to split five members among themselves as well. So, you know, there's certain ways, I guess, you could read into it. There's definitely a lack of trust expressed in the mayor. It does give this newly revised RTA board more power to fire the head of the CTA, which was not possible and was, I think, a big frustration for a lot of people under Dorval Carter. So, you know, there's certain ways to think about it, but I think it's kind of a mixed bag so far for the city of Chicago.
Would there still be a CTA board under this proposal?
Yeah.
Okay, so there still would be a CTA board, but maybe their teeth are cut a little bit, considering RTA would have the ability under this plan or whatever it's going to be named now, Northern Illinois, et cetera, would have the power to make more decisions about what happens at the day-to-day operations.
Absolutely. The CTA would really be delegated to actually carrying out those services, implementing it, carrying out this planning that the RTA has delegated down to instituting the services, making sure the trains are running on time. That is going to be the responsibility of the transit agencies. The RTA in this scenario would really have a lot more power to, you know, kind of micromanage these agencies and coerce them into actually doing things that, you know, the full board identifies as initiatives that these agencies need to take.
Okay, so the revenue that has been outlined in the Senate is essentially new taxes on rideshare and tollway fares. I imagine that's an end, a ways to ends to a mean, means to an end. That's what I'm saying, Ben. Right, you are going to raise the money to be able to fund this. Is it also the idea that maybe that incentivizes more people to ride public transportation again, more riders, more fares, and this is going to be something that helps the transit agencies out as well?
Yeah, that's always kind of the point of some of these taxes, is to try and incentivize a certain behavior. So, you know, lawmakers are thinking that by increasing tolls, people would be more incentivized. Well, they'll hop on the train because now they're going to have to pay an extra dollar for a toll if they take the toll road on a given day. You know, and in that scenario, it might make more sense to take the train because the toll cost could equal the same fare as a Metro ticket, for example. But, you know, some of the other things that they want to do to incentivize this would be a real estate transaction tax that gets expanded out of the city of Chicago into the suburbs. That's where, you know, there's a lot of controversy on that. And a lot of lawmakers aren't seeing the connection between real estate and the transit. So, you know, it's kind of also mixed on that front as far as if it's targeted towards transit or just a funding source, essentially, for something.
We got to go, Ben. But when we talk at 2:30 in the afternoon on Saturday afternoon, do you think this will be done by then, the last day of the legislative session?
I have no idea, to be honest with you.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll check in then. All right, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
CapitalNewsIllinois.com is where you can go for more. Ben does, and his whole team, they do great work. And we'll chat on Let's Get Legal on Saturday. Okay. I love talking about AI. I think Iridian's sick of how many times I tell her, book an AI guest. Because I just am so amazed by the technology. And I think it's a fascinating storyline of the pros and the cons of it, right? And the things that go wrong with AI and the things that are right with AI. It's a really complicated story about our future and where we're going. And really our reality, too. Nick Schlanger joins us now. He's the Director of Research Services at NII Hifman. Am I saying that right, Nick?
Yes, you are, John. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Just remind us all what NAI Hifman is.
Yeah, so NAI Hifman is a commercial real estate services firm based in the Chicago metro. We offer brokerage, property management, and advisory services, mostly for office, industrial, and retail sectors.
Okay. And where do you intersect with the AI story? Is it how we house the places that run this data?
Yeah, so I recently talked, spoke with BOMA, and we put out an article kind of focused on the data centers and AI and kind of the intersection of those two. So you want to talk about AI or data centers?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what I want to know is that data centers, are huge buildings that are popping up everywhere. I mean, the power to run AI is extensive, right?
Right. Yeah. So data centers, I mean, really, they're the backbone of our digital life. And right now we're in a huge construction boom to kind of keep up with that exploding demand. So AI, cloud services, and, you know, our online lifestyles are really driving record growth for these data centers.
What does a data center look like? Like, is it a bunch of people inside, or is it a bunch of what, servers inside that are constantly running and churning out data and taking a lot of power from the grid?
Yeah, there are not a lot of people inside of a data center. So it just kind of looks like, you know, in a small industrial building, but inside, yeah, there are tons of servers running that use, I mean, just an unbelievable amount of power and cooling to keep those running.
Do we have enough power to meet this demand?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the things that really, really sets Chicago apart as a premier destination for, you know, for data centers. I think, Chicago, we sit kind of at the crossroads of America, so we have a great centralized location that gives us, you know, network connectivity to both coasts. But I think the most important thing, to your point, is we have a robust, reliable power grid. We have the third most reliable power grid in the country. So that's really critical in an industry where, you know, power is kind of the new anchor. So any locations with strong, scalable electricity are really kind of the new prime in real estate, particularly for data centers.
As NVIDIA goes up and down, it's fascinating to watch the other companies' stocks that we don't make a lot of hay about, but also ride that AI wave, similar to NVIDIA, who makes the chips, or other companies that power AI. And one of them is like nuclear power, that stocks have gone astronomically higher for the most part. There have been some dips here and there, like the rest of the AI stocks, because people are just trying to invest or find ways to invest in what will power AI, literally make it go in the future. And I imagine that that's something that states that maybe don't have a strong power grid have better get their act on right now if they're going to attract any of these data centers and any AI companies to their region.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, data centers just consume an enormous amount of electricity. Even when we look at kind of some of the largest data center markets, Northern Virginia being the top in the world, 35% of all data services go through Northern Virginia. That grid is really stretched to capacity. So I think, you know, developers are really looking for markets with a couple things, but strong power infrastructure is really number one. And then I think from there, we see climate and land availability as kind of the next two. But among the top five markets for data centers, I think really Chicago has the strongest power infrastructure. And I think that will really allow us to expand in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Are there enough people that know how to do this stuff that we're going to need, right? Like the talent, is there enough?
Yeah, so right now there are not. I think what we are looking at is the industry kind of expects to need 300,000 new global workers in the field by the end of 2025. So
by the end of this year, they need 300,000 more people to do this stuff.
That is correct. So, you know, the roles kind of range from technicians and engineers. You know, there's a lot that goes into this other than just, you know, the programmers, the designers, but there's just a vast amount of people that are needed to fill these roles.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but there's a lot of hurdles that we seem to need to overcome. Data centers, power to power these data centers, the employees that can work at them, and AI in general. Are these problems that China has, or are these unique to the United States? I guess what I'm ultimately asking, is the United States poised to win this AI technological battle, or are we not in a great position to do so?
No, I think that we are in a good position. I know, you know, while we may need you know, a lot more workers in the coming years, I think that we have, you know, we've created a lot of programs to kind of adapt to this. So we have training programs. We're seeing a lot of military veteran recruitment and kind of vocational partnerships to meet demand. And I think one of the nice things about the data center job market is you don't necessarily need a 4-year degree or an advanced degree to get involved. You can, whether it's on the engineering side of things, maintenance, or even the programming side of things, you can get involved in kind of a lower level and work your way through. And we've seen that over the last 5 years. So there is a large talent pool that we can draw from. And I do think that we're well positioned in America to meet that demand.
Nick, come back again. NAI Hiffman. We're out of time now, though. Thanks for it. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.